Straight Talk on WRHI FM 100.1 and CN2 is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Piedmont Medical Center is with us today, a community built on care, and you can find out more about them online at piedmontmedicalcenter.com. Big crowd here today, must be because of the first guest that we have on here today, the man who's kicking off our 2024 series of political profiles, Mr. Montrio Belton, who is running for Rock Hill School Board. Hello, Montrio. How are you?
Doing well. I hope you are.
All right. Tell everybody, first off, a little bit about Montrio, your background.
Montrio Belton, been here in the local community for about 30 years. Went to Winthrop, where I got my undergraduate and master's degree. Started my career here as a teacher at Rollison Road Middle School. After finishing teaching, continued as a school-level administrator for about another 10 years as a high school assistant principal and a middle school principal. Was also the director of school transformation for the South Carolina Department of Education. So I have a master's degree and a doctorate in education. Went on to the University of South Carolina School of Law, where I have a law degree, where I own a local litigation firm here where we do education law, criminal litigation, and personal injury litigation.
So how does one jump from education to law? That's quite a jump.
Quite frankly, I always wanted to be an attorney. I actually didn't get in law school right out of undergrad, and then was tutoring and working with some students out at Rollison Road in this program called WINGS. Enjoyed education. Once I got into education, I thoroughly enjoyed being a teacher, thoroughly enjoyed being a coach, and then went on to be a principal and thought I wanted to be a superintendent. That legal itch continued, and once I got to Columbia at the Department of Education, start working more on the policy level, I decided to go ahead and pursue the law degree. And so I still am connected to education through my work as an attorney.
Good. All right. So why does somebody who I'm sure is as busy as you are decide you want to take on some more work, which is called the school board?
I appreciate your asking that question. It's a very legitimate question, and I've thought that myself. And I'm certainly not here, and I'm not running to indict anyone who's involved, but because I don't know the answers to all of the questions, and I don't know the reasons why, but I can tell you one thing: whether it's real or perceived, there's a perception, or there's a view among many in our public that Rock Hill Schools has lost its academic competitiveness. There's also this idea that Rock Hill Schools are not safe, and there's this idea that Rock Hill Schools do not represent what they represented in the early, mid, and late 90s when I was a teacher here in this district. So I am running because I do think I have nearly 30 years of valuable experience that I can bring to that position. I understand education. I understand how schools work. I'm formally trained in it. And also as an attorney, I've been on the outside looking in with many of the issues that are impacting our schools. So I'm still very much connected to what's going on in education and feel like I have some value.
So do you agree with the assessment that the Rock Hill schools have lost their competitive edge and that they're not safe?
You know, I've had several conversations with some school administrators, and I've told them that at this point, nobody can be in a defensive posture. The reality of it is, if we just look at the most current numbers that are online, 26.3% of our seventh graders met or exceeded in math, 47% in ELA, seventh graders met or exceed, only 61% of English 2 with your end of course testing, and only 39.3% of Algebra 1 ELC. When you hear those types of numbers, there's no way I could function, my business could operate, if at the highest I'm operating, it's a 61% capacity and I'm only doing my job 61% of the time. So certainly none of us can disagree that the numbers that are currently out there in terms of our academic, what we're doing academically, nobody can agree that that is something we can be proud of. So yes, certainly, and as I've been campaigning, there have been things that I did not know That the number of parents that do not send their schools children to the traditional schools here locally, many of our parents here are choosing, particularly at the secondary level, one of our public charter schools and even private schools. So certainly, again, I don't know whether it's real or perceived. I don't know the reasons, and I'm certainly not here indicting administrators or indicting teachers because I don't know the reason. But I am running to maybe help peel back that onion and figure out what the core cause is, and hopefully add some value, be a value added to school leaders and school teachers, and how we can start turning the ship around.
Would you agree or disagree that part of the issue here with the lack of competitiveness is the fact that a lot of these kids are coming from family settings where there is not the push, the promotion, the whatever you want to call for education to make sure that the kids are doing what they're doing?
Certainly. We all know that many children who come into the school ready to learn, had a good night's sleep, supportive parents, absolutely we recognize that that has a tremendous impact on academic performance. But we cannot, you know, we are public school educators, and being a public school educator means we have to accept who comes through the door and we have to educate them. And so if we're going to have a defeatist attitude that because a child comes from a single parent home or because a child is poor, then why are we doing what we're doing? Why do we keep putting money toward it? Then why not just close up shop and figure out another way to educate children? So that phenomenon has always existed. Those children have always been in our schools, and those children will always be in our schools. We've got to figure out how to educate them. And so I am not one that's going to throw up the towel and just suggest that because a child is poor, because of a child's home situation, that child, it's impossible to educate that child. If that were the case, I would not have been educated. My mom was a single parent. There were four of us, and all four of us are college educated, and all four of us have very successful careers.
And I bet your mama was all over you all the time.
No question about it. There was a high expectation in our home. No question.
There you go. But when you have kids coming to school who are hungry, who can't get breakfast, you know, which many of these kids cannot get, the free and reduced lunch population in the Rock Hill School District is significant, no question about it. And you've got to overcome, I would think you would agree, those obstacles before you can ever get inside and start teaching them the fundamentals of education.
Certainly. I mean, there's a direct correlation, again, as I mentioned earlier, that I have a doctorate degree in this, and if you ever bored and you want to have some good reading, just read the dissertation that I wrote about this educational schism that existed between poor children, and I primarily focused on what then was called, you know, that I-95 corridor. So if you ever have an opportunity, you can read that dissertation. Certainly, I don't argue that there's a correlation between socioeconomic status and academic performance.
So with these, you know, with an agreement that these realities do exist, do you have any specific ideas as to how you would go about tackling this? Maybe one or two ideas.
Oh, absolutely. I actually have a lot of ideas. I think one of the big steps that has started to look at this calendar. And I know that ultimately it should be driven by the community. And I know ultimately that anytime we change, that creates hardships for some. But moving away from this agrarian calendar where children have long periods of time off and you're dealing with the summer loss, particularly for children who don't have access to academic materials, et cetera. Secondly, looking at our high schools and how we can look at things like dual credit, how we can look at ways that we can have more career and technical education offerings for children. One of the big issues that we've got to deal with, and I hear this time and time again, regardless of what community, and this is transcending race, it's transcending community, it's transcending socioeconomics, is what does discipline look like in the school, and getting to a point where our kids are safe and secure when they come to schools, and teachers have orderly classrooms in which they can conduct lessons. So, but I also believe, and this was a philosophy I had as a principal, anyone who's taught to me has heard that all children deserve to learn, but all children don't deserve to learn in the traditional environment. So what does an environment look like where these children can be successful, but not necessarily be able to disrupt, particularly at the high school level that we have? So there are lots of ideas that I have, but man, let me be clear. I am simply a candidate. I have not had access to all of the inside information that you would have as an incumbent. And I don't know what the causes are, and I think it would be irresponsible for me as a candidate, as I would think it would be irresponsible for any of the candidates, to start launching what would fix the problem when you have not had access to be inside of the institution to really do some exploring and learn what you believe the issue is. One of the things that I firmly believe in as a board member is that you hire competent leaders and you allow competent leaders to do those ideas, and boards have to be partners with school administrators and with the teachers to achieve the ultimate outcome, which is academic success. Because at the end of the day, that is the mission and the purpose of any educational institution, is to educate the children who are in there.
All right, let me ask you one question before we run out of time here. And I told you I was going to ask you this question.
Certainly.
There's a question mark in some people's mind as to where does Montrio Belton actually live. He resides in Fort Mill, and you have children in Fort Mill schools, and you have an office on Saluda Street here in Rock Hill, and you have children in the Rock Hill school system. So explain that to me.
Yeah, and I appreciate that question. And let me say, the citizens of seat one deserve to have a candidate that's part of their community, live in their community, and Spartan. First of all, I've been part of this community for 30 years, so I'm not a new person in Rock Hill. Secondly, my wife and I have worked hard over the last 21 years that we've been married, and we've been very successful, and I know my wife probably is hating that we're being outed like this. We've been successful enough that we've been able to purchase multiple properties. So I did have a son. I do not have a child in Fort Mill Schools. My son is now in college. He graduated Fort Mill Schools 2 years ago. My daughter, who's currently in Rock Hill Schools, has always gone to school in Rock Hills. Initially, I think we paid a small fee for her to go to schools in Rock Hill. And then at this point now, she's in that language immersion program that she started in kindergarten and has gone through. And we've been extremely pleased and proud of the education that she has gotten in Rock Hill Schools. So we've always been committed to Rock Hill Schools. I actually do own my home here in Rock Hill that we actually purchased 2 years ago out of my desire to eventually run for school board. I purchased this home 2 years ago, 511 Saluda Street, as a matter of fact, and I have done everything legally required of me to change my residence to Rock Hill. So I actually reside in Rock Hill. As a matter of fact, if you ride by there now, I just joke with the county treasurer, if anyone were to call out there now, they can send them the tax bill.
He'll send you another tax bill.
So we do own a home in Fort Mill. We have no intentions on selling our home in Fort Mill, and at some point in life, we intend to maybe return to our home in Fort Mill. But we absolutely have met all the legal requirements, and I absolutely do reside and meet all the legal requirements to run for school board, and will reside if I'm elected. That will be my permanent residence until or unless I decide not to run, or the citizens do not elect me again. So that's not a legal issue. It's more of a political issue for some. But I've checked all the legal boxes.
Okay. Now, if you are successful in this election for District 1, what do you see as your 1, 2, 3 on your to-do list that you want to jump on? And you only have about less than 2 minutes to get into it.
My 1, 2, 3, and I can do it in less than 3. I've run on kind of I'm a linear guy, so I've developed what I call my SMART goals, with the S being safe and secure schools, the M being the academic growth. How do we make academic growth, particularly citing some of the statistics that I gave you earlier? The A being the accountability and competitiveness. I am concerned about the number of citizens that I am meeting, to include people in Tanya and I's family who have chosen to pull their children out of Rock Hill Schools, and now their children are going to some of the public charter schools here. How do we regain that competitiveness where people want their children to go to school in Rock Hill Schools? How do we recruit and retain effective employees? I know there was a big push toward pay raises this year. How do we do more with increasing teacher pay? How do we do more with ensuring that we are creating an environment where we can recruit and retain effective educators? And lastly, transparency with stakeholders. So those are my SMART goals, and those are the 5 things that I will be focusing on if I'm fortunate enough to be elected to meet District 1.
His name is Montrio Belton. You just heard a good 15-minute summary of who he is and why he's doing this. Thank you for being here with us today.
I appreciate you, man, and thank you so much for having me.
And that's going to wrap up this segment of our Straight Talk program, live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented, of course, by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Good Pharmacy is with us, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road to Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, so here we go. We do fresh subs and salads here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. There is a way that we do those. Come on over here, County Treasurer. You can do this as well. I know you can read. At the count of three, how do we do it here? One, two, three. Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden. Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI and CN2.
Stuck in the office? Can't get away from school? Then go to our website, mysubstationii.com. Click on your delivery choice, place your order, and they'll bring your sub or salad to you at home, school, the office, or even where you're watching the game. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop.
When it comes to matters of the heart, you want someone who understands you. And that's our mission at Piedmont's Heart and Vascular Center. We are the only cardiovascular hospital in York County providing comprehensive care from diagnosis to recovery. Our team includes experienced cardiologists, cardiovascular surgeons, and nurses, all dedicated to keeping your heart healthy. Cardiac care with advanced technology close to home. That's Piedmont Medical Center. Learn more online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
Now, parts of Western York County can enjoy Comporium's advanced internet technology every day. Thanks to the partnership between Comporium and York Electric Cooperative, parts of Western York County now have access to Comporium fiber technology that gives you the ability to stream, download, search, and conference quickly and reliably. Not only is Comporium fiber fast, it's also affordable, starting at just $49.99 per month with no connection fee. For details, go online to comporium.link/YEC to sign up for Comporium high-speed internet today.
When disaster strikes, one of the most important things is getting life back to normal. A little compassion can go a long way. Paul Davis is here for you. Paul Davis is committed to handling any property damage with exceptional care, because what we do is about more than property. It's about people. We have the training and expertise necessary to completely restore your property fast. For all your cleanup and restoration needs, call the experts at Paul Davis Restoration at 329-1140 or find us online at pauldavisrockhill.com.
Ready for a win-win? For a limited time, upgrade your ride for less and score a chance to win the ultimate football experience. That's right. From now until October 31st, apply for an auto loan at a reduced rate with Founders Federal Credit Union, and you're automatically entered to win four tickets to the Clemson versus USC game in Death Valley on November 30th, an exclusive Death Valley experience and a Founders tailgate package. Stop by a Founders office or apply online today. Visit foundersfcu.com/auto to learn more. Terms and conditions apply. No purchase necessary. Membership qualification required.
If life is getting in the way of having your favorite substation sub or salad, there is a solution. Just go to our website, mysubstationii.com, click on your delivery choice, place your order, and they'll bring it to you wherever you are. Substation 2, Cherry Road, across from Winthrop. This is Charlie Ruffalo, and I paid for this message.
Straight Talk on WRHI-FM 100.1 and CN2 is brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. Once again, the county treasurer is interrupting a valuable conversation. Here we go. Pass the card on. Get that all done. I have two ladies with me, Adrian Woods from Safe Passage and Dr. Amber Black as well. So, hi, ladies. How's everybody doing?
We're doing well. Hi.
Okay, let's go around the table here and do some introductions. Let's start with you.
Okay.
Adrian.
I am Adrian Woods. I'm the executive director of Safe Passage. I've been here since January 2021. An attorney by training, but an advocate at heart, and always involved with victim services one way or the other.
Good for you. Lawyers everywhere. I just had a lawyer on. Here's another lawyer. Good for you. All right. Now we have somebody from the world of education.
Yes. So I'm Dr. Amber Slack. I am the Dean of Students and Associate Vice President for Student Affairs at Winthrop University, where I also serve as a Title IX coordinator, which puts me in the position to working with students who might experience sexual misconduct. And as part of that, I became involved in Safe Passage as a board member about 2 years ago. So I've been excited to be part of the board.
So for those who have absolutely no idea about what Safe Passage is, go ahead. You're on, Adrian.
Thank you. Safe Passage is a nonprofit with over 30 years in the community, and we provide counseling and advocacy services to domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse victims. We're also the local child advocacy center, which means that law enforcement or DSS will send cases to us so that we can interview children to determine if they've been abused and or neglected. We have an emergency shelter. We have a rapid rehousing program. And we have a dedicated staff of about 33
who
work to ensure that survivors of these crimes actually have a voice, who have services and anything that they need.
Oh, my God. Well, so how many ladies are you working with, I don't know, in the course of a month, a year, however you tabulate this?
So I will say, I'll give you our stats from 2023. And we, it's not only ladies, but we also work with men for all across the board.
Say that again.
It's not only ladies, but we also work with men who are not only survivors of domestic violence, but survivors of sexual assault. And of course, male okay. children who are victims of abuse and neglect.
You got that.
Overall, I would say last year we had about 1,100 domestic violence survivors that we work with, and our domestic violence services not only include York County, but it also includes Chester and Lancaster County. We work with about 140 sexual assault survivors, and that would be York and Union County, South Carolina. And then with the interviews that we've conducted for child abuse and neglect investigations, last year we had about 340 interviews. It's a lot. It's busy. We're very busy, but we enjoy it.
Well, you're providing a valuable service. No question
yes.
about that.
Yes.
I don't know about the enjoyment because, you probably see the worst of humanity.
We see the worst of humanity, but we also see the strength of people who care in our community, who care about survivors. I think we employ people who have a heart to help and to make a change. I think not only with our employees, but our board members, our volunteers. We consistently have anywhere between 10 to 20 volunteers who come in and do various things, but not easy. Very difficult work, but rewarding work when we can help someone who needs help.
So, Doc, you teach America's Future. What's going on in the world? Do you get them engaged in this?
Yes. So we actually have some of our students that volunteer with Safe Passage. We have worked with Safe Passage last year to bring in a speaker to campus to talk to students about sexual misconduct and different ways to address it. I think it is something that is near and dear to a lot of our students' hearts, which is why they want to get involved and do more with Safe Passage.
That's good. Well, now, you all exist. I mean, financially, you all exist. Through, I know you get donations, but
yes.
you get grants, or you get something from the state of South. I mean, how does it all work?
So it's a combination of grants at the state and federal level, as well as donations by individuals, organizations. We also get some funding from foundations. We've received funding from the Spring Close Foundation, but the majority of our funding comes from federal and state grants. So the Victims of Crime Act is one of our biggest funders. There's some funding through Department of Social Services, the American Rescue Plan Act, things of that nature, as well as some funding through the Department of Health and Human Services, which was once DHEC, but now they've changed. We received funding for sexual assault services through them.
So to run this big battleship with 33 people and all the services you provide, your budget's what?
Our budget is close to $2
million. $2 million.
But unfortunately, this year we have had some severe cutbacks from the VOCA funding. The federal government did not fund VOCA at the prior funding levels. So there's a 40% decrease across the United States, which means that your nonprofits, law enforcement, solicitors, or prosecutors who work with victims of crime receive less money. So for the state of South Carolina, we receive less money, and the legislature failed to fill in that gap. So we lost over $250,000 this year, which means that two positions that were going to be filled can't be filled. And there are other like organizations in the state who are cutting positions. Now, we're not at the point that we're going to eliminate any positions, field positions, but it's tightening the budgetary belt and making sure that we can keep employees on the ground so that we can provide services.
So needless to say, with the population growing here in
yes.
York, Chester, Lancaster County, that makes the job a little bit more difficult and challenging?
For sure. Yeah, they work really hard to provide these services to these community members. Like, these are our neighbors. And so I think it's just such a vital things that they provide the community, and they're working hard to make sure that everyone has those services.
And my guess is, without knowing anything about this, that you are seeing cases walk through your door that cross every economic strata in this county.
Yes.
Every racial.
Yes.
I mean, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. It's just the way it is. Prior to working for Safe Passage, I also worked for the Department of Social Services and worked as a Victims of Crime Act attorney in Greenville, South Carolina, covering about 10 counties in that area. Basically, a lot of domestic violence, things of that nature. And I've seen men, women, doctors' wives, attorneys, it crosses the board.
Did it get worse during COVID?
One of the things I would probably hazard a guess, yes. Yeah. But the unique aspect of COVID meant that people were at home. They were not out and about. We did see a decrease in calls. Can you call and ask for assistance if your abuser is in the house?
No, absolutely not.
You definitely cannot do that. So I think COVID exacerbated, I think, a lot of the trauma that we see from any of the types of services that we provide, whether it's domestic violence, sexual assault, or child abuse. That was an exacerbating incident.
When you put people together under a roof that don't like each other to begin with, and they can't go to work, and they can't go to school, and they can't go do this. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. I understand.
And sometimes it's not even it's a power and control dynamic. Mm-hmm. That a lot of times our survivors are being controlled by words, mental, physical, emotional abuse. And the physical abuse can become a lot worse when you're stuck in the house together. Absolutely.
Of course, I think my solution to this would be just hire yourself a great big bully. And every time one of these guys gets out of line, you send a bully out and just straighten them out. That'd be the end of it.
It'd be nice.
Those bullies are called the police in my world.
No, but I'm talking about somebody who just take them out to the woodshed, and you and we're going to have a talk. So do you have any activities coming up that we want to talk about?
We do. I have two activities for you. Tomorrow we are actually hosting a domestic violence awareness walk. And so we invite the community to come out and walk with us. We're going to start at 104 Oakland and then walk to Fountain Park. We've been able to have the city join us in that effort, and they're going to turn the fountain lights purple.
Oh, yeah.
And support a domestic violence awareness. It's a deep purple.
Okay.
And then on Thursday, October 24th at 6 p.m. at McBride Hall, we have our fourth annual It Takes a Community Domestic Violence Fundraiser. Well, we bring together like-minded community members in support of who want to support us and who want to support our community in trying to eliminate domestic violence. It's a great time of food, amazing food and drinks, a lot of fun with a silent and live auction, presentations. This year's theme will be Everyone is Impacted by Domestic Violence, and we are highlighting some of the males who've come through our doors, and then not only males who've come through our doors, but board members, the community members who are engaged in this topic.
So we can find out details on this on your website?
You can find the details on our website.
Which is?
Safe Passage SC, S is in South Carolina, SC is in South Carolina.org.
Okay. Ladies, 15 minutes, blew right back. Thank you very much for being with us. Adrian, Dr. Amber Slack, thanks for being with us.
Thank
and that's
you.
Going to wrap up our Straight Talk program for this Wednesday afternoon. Live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Comporium, your friendly neighborhood tech giant. Of course, we're here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. We know what we do here, fresh subs and salads, 6 days a week between 10 a.m. and 9 p.m. How we do it is in the white letters, and this lady right here looking at the pumpkins knows exactly what we're going to do. At the count of three, let's tell everybody. 1, 2, 3.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have yourself a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.